Hello, good evening, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is International Flavor, and you are listening to Damn Radio. Isn't that just damn wonderful for us? There's quite a bit of news to go through tonight, quite a few things to discuss and to talk about. Not even really sure where I want to begin. I have several topics lined up, and I want to ultimately get to what's going on in Kyiv right now. I'm going to go a little back and forth here because a lot of these things are interrelated in the news. If you would like to speak with me, I'd be happy to talk to you. 573-746-8020. I've been trying to find the latest real news on the peace talks that were quite short, according to what everyone has said. The talks were just extremely short. And I definitely want to get into somewhat of that. But there was also one here that is a feature. Now, this is, you know, I'm anti Lindsey Graham. Everybody knows that. Well, if you listen to me at all, you know I'm against that guy. He never met a war he couldn't convince himself to love. And this is one of them. Something very, very interesting happened to me today. I was got in a conversation with someone, and well, a pair, a couple, a man and a wife, and they were discussing things. And it's pretty funny because they know I speak Russian. They know that I used to be in the military, but I really don't know them that well. And so, but we were just passing the time and, you know, we were waiting. And so it was going to go on for a little while. And they asked me, they said, you know, we know you know this, and we know you might tell us what's really going on with Zelensky. We never really liked Zelensky, you know, and the guy goes, man, my wife never liked him. She couldn't stand him from the get-go. She was going, there's something just bad about that guy. Well, I'm always careful when people I don't know, you know, or people that don't know me want to discuss what my thoughts are. It's one thing to tune in voluntarily and listen to me, but it's another for me to go out spouting things and, you know, trying to convince you. I'm not trying to convince you of anything here. I appreciate that you listen. I want you to listen, but I'm not trying to convince you of anything. And, you know, I have my opinions, but I realize they are mine, and I realize that you have yours. So I said to him, I said, well, I can lecture on that topic, and I often do. And I took the opportunity to tell them about my program here at Nights. And I may have gained a listener, who knows, or two. And I hope I did. That'd be entertaining. And they're very nice people. And I basically apologized up front and said, you know, I can tell you what I think, but everybody knows that the war is, this entire thing is the result of people like Lindsey Graham and his, you know, crusade, and these crusade of the deep staters to hold on to this hegemonic power that they have, or they have been able to have. And I think there's a very much a lot to that. When I think about the struggles over the last 10 to 15 years, when I think of what is going on in the world today, and when I think about the impact that we have had, or I shouldn't say we, because it's not really we. It's these people these government actors. And, you know, I've never been an extremely religious person, but I do have my beliefs. And I believe that if there really are things like the end times or anything like that, if any of the things that I learned in my childhood are true, which I tend to believe, you know, a lot of them, then, you know, we're fast approaching something different. We're fast approaching many different things on many different fronts. And I think that the battle for the soul of a man, not of a population, not of a country, but of a man, of a good man, because worldwide there are very good people. I've met good people in all kinds of good countries. And this continual war, this continual creation of enemies that doesn't exist. I mean, I've been putting somewhat of a thought into this kind of a big thesis for me. Because I feel like I've been watching this. Do you ever get that feeling when you're going through something in life and you're going, there's something, it's like an expectation and you know something is going to be there? I got to tell you, I've had this expectation for some time now. And then it's been, you know, a lot of people try to encourage me when I talk about the horror story of the state of Missouri, or some individual actors of the state of Missouri, to destroy me, to target me, when who the heck am I? You know, I'm nobody of great importance, never have been. I've done some cool things in my life. I've gotten some things done. But the fight for a man's soul seems to be going on everywhere. And the fight against government overreach, if you don't want to call it corruption, government taking charge of your lives, you know, and you see it everywhere. You see it in everything. And now you get to see it in hindsight. Don't tell me that you didn't have thoughts back when this Russia Gate hoax was all up, and Trump was stealing elections with the help of Russia. And don't tell me that you believed that was true, that Vladimir Putin helped Donald Trump steal the 2016 election, and that Russia has been consistently attempting to impact Western elections, and that this is the kind of crap, that this divisive crap isn't just a United States thing. It's going on in a lot of places. And there, you know, I feel like I'm watching some of the death throes of the deep state, the death throes, because they keep getting more and more extreme. And, you know, I keep going back to these, and you see them, these little, for me, they always feel like, I used to do one of these racing games. I forget what it was called, but it was Cruising USA or something like that. And you could always find me in some arcade playing these games. Even as I was in my late 20s and early 30s, I was still doing quite a bit of it. And anyway, part of that was like, you'd make it past the point where you got to keep on driving and it'd go, checkpoint. You know, and you'd go to the next point, you get past it, go checkpoint, and it would say checkpoint, checkpoint. Well, forever in my life, I have gotten these feelings like, and I know I'm not alone because I've talked to other people about it, that kind of say to you, yep, you're where you should be. You know, you're where you should be. Checkpoint, you know, checkpoint. You're where you should be. And it's really weird because you kind of feel comfortable about that. And when these people were talking to me today and asking me my thoughts on Russia, on Ukraine, on Vladimir Putin even, and I had warned them up front that, you know, I'm perfectly, you know, willing to give you my story, my thoughts on this, you know, based on your level of knowledge, you know, I can talk here, or if you don't know anything, I can start from the very beginning and tell you what it is, but I don't want to take your whole day. You know, that's not my point. If you wish to listen at night at from 9 to 10:30 Central Time, please do. I like to talk, and that's why I do it. And I like to feel like, you know, I'm summarizing these things. But my point in telling you all of these is I keep seeing these checkpoints. This is where where I'm supposed to be, which means that's got to be where everybody else is supposed to be. And you know, I don't feel comfortable sometimes with where I'm at. I don't feel right that I was destroyed in the way that I was destroyed. There is no reason that I shouldn't be granted a bar license in the state of Missouri again. And this Sam Phillips is an evil person who went out and intentionally created a scenario because he knew exactly what he was doing with the arms of government and the arms of power that I knew nothing about and don't apply to any rules. But okay, I lost that battle. That is something else that that is just where that's just a job. That's not who I am as a person. So hopefully they didn't destroy that part. You know what I mean? And I don't think it changes who you are. And so my point in this is, and I've said this repeatedly over the last week, is that there's so many people going through so many things where the government is the bad guy. And even I have said that you go back for centuries about the impact of government, whether you're fighting the king, you're fighting against being a serf, whether you don't want to be in the slave pits and fighting against gladiators and dying, whether you're talking democracy in ancient Greece or Rome or any of these places, or whether you were a slave traded in Egypt and left with Moses or any of those things. Everybody has always been fighting the evil tyranny of government. And we're no different. We are no different. It's just that for my lifetime, at least, most of us have been blind to it. When we realized that there were hoaxes being pulled over our eyes and that things, there are a lot of people, none of us want to believe it. I didn't want to believe it. And some people still don't believe it. And they believe that, you know, all those people in the government, they're good people. Oh, really? They tend to target people, and they do it because that's how they get power. You know, the same things exist everywhere. Jealousy, all of these things. And I say these big picture type of things because it's this battle for our souls, the soul of a man, has been going on for some time. And I feel like there's something coming, something big. You know, there's some big things like, is it World War III? Is it whatever? I was reminded while talking to these people today, and I know I've said this on this channel before, of listening to Vladimir Putin and just not shock. Shock wasn't the right word. It was more irony and more, Yeah. You know, just go figure. Just go figure. Because what a change of events when my own country, my own government is out there extolling the virtue of destroying the family and creating instead some state parent who is now the state gets to be your parent and allow your child to, what do they call it, transgender affirmation. They want to affirm the child's own beliefs because kids are, you know, extremely smart at that age. You can't decide whether or not to, you know, open a bottle of your father's whiskey, but you can decide that you don't want to have a penis. You know, this is where we are. And so it was somewhat with irony that I told these people and reminded myself, because they were somewhat, they told me, you know, that we're pretty religious, we're Christian, we believe in the family and we believe in all those things. We've been against, you know, they told me a little bit about themselves, very nice people. And, you know, they say, we're not judgmental. We don't care, you know, about what people, heck, I'm not judgmental, but I know what's right and what's wrong. An 8-year-old does, you know, and it can tell you what's right or what's wrong. You get any younger than that, you might have, you know, sometimes you run into a little problem. Oh, well, I didn't know, but you generally know right from wrong when you're very, you know, pretty small. And so when you have to hear, and it reminded me when I told them today, when you have to hear a speech by Vladimir Putin before his own, like, State of the Union address equivalent, at the start of the Ukraine full-scale war in 2022, shortly after that, and he gives his equivalent of the State of the Union, and is telling the world and Russia that, you know, we are here in this battle. And this battle has been going on for some time. And this battle, you know, we are Russia. It sounded very American. It sounded very Reagan-esque, to be truthful. He's going, we are Russia. We prevailed in World War II, you know, our forefathers saved civilization from the evils of Hitler. You know, we lost all these people. We have 15 different languages in our country, and we honor them all. We have all kinds of people from all kinds of society, and these are his words, not mine. We don't intrude into your bedroom, basically, is what he said. We don't go digging in your bedroom. Now, it's not legal to have these relationships, but I'm going to explain why here in a minute. And I'm not saying that I'm necessarily for it. It's another method of going about, you know, our method is, I don't know what, gender-affirming care for 8-year-olds and or 6-year-olds who can't decide for themselves and, you know, don't know anything. But theirs is different. They have a different set of laws and a different culture. But he said the nature of Russia, the very nature of it, he said they're canceling our culture. They're canceling our sportsmen. They're canceling our musicians. And they're still doing that. I told you a few stories about that a couple of days ago, that they're canceling all of these things. He said, we honor religions, various types in our country. We have a huge population of Muslims, huge populations of Christians, huge populations of all forms of religions. And he said, we have the Russian Orthodox Church, which many of us follow, and you know, we have all of these things, and so we honor your choice of religion and who you wish to be and the freedoms that you get to pick, you know, and all of those things. And he said the West is meanwhile putting forward what we believe to be decay, things like transgender, promoting them above, you know, what we would call normal, you know, a normal, and which has been normal for millennia, for since the coming of man. No, not to say that, you know, there hasn't been things like homosexuality. Homosexuality's been around a long time too, but people understood that it was not the, that isn't what's going to continue the species. And so he said many of these things, and of course I'm spitballing it and some of the things that he put out, but the final point that he made is that, you know, when we watch the core of the nation, the core of the nation is the family. And I about fell out of my chair. And he goes, for us in Russia, we don't care about, they do, but he mean we don't necessarily intrude into that relationship. You know, if you're having a gay relationship, you know, you just can't sell it to children. You know, you can't, whether it's right or wrong, they have their own rules too. And he says, but for us in Russia, it has been and always will be. The definition of a family in Russia is a man, his wife, and their children. That is a family. And the whole room stood up in thunderous applause. And I remember thinking the irony of it all, going, oh my God. We look like jokes. You know, our government has so flipped out. You can say what you want about Vladimir Putin. You don't have to agree with him. I don't agree with everything he does. I think he's been extremely steady. I think our government has not been, you know. And so when you listen to things like this and the fight for what's going on, all I can say is I still feel like checkpoints. It's like I told you several days ago about Vladimir Zhirinovsky, the guy who predicted so many things, and he was so well spoken, and he and universities and young people liked to listen to him to hear stories. He lived through a lot. He saw a lot. He was well thought of by all. I saw something recently where he was on a video screen with Vladimir Putin, and it was pretty funny because he left Vladimir Putin waiting, and Vladimir Putin is waiting in a room on a video. It's like a video conference, a Zoom call or something, and they're waiting, and he says, Vladimir Wolfovich, because they always talk formal, and Wolfovich is Vladimir I think I got it right. Vladimir Wolfovich. He says, where'd Vladimir Wolfovich go? Because his screen was empty. And they're waiting for him. And Putin's there. Well, we'll wait a few minutes for him to come back. And Vladimir Wolfovich, which is Zhirinovsky, he comes back in the room. And Putin says, he went to go grab a few bites because Wolfovich is covered with crumbs and whatnot. And he's talking, but I mean, that Wolfovich guy, Vladimir Wolfovich Zhirinovsky, he predicted a bunch of this stuff. He knew all of these things. They respected he was 75 or 76 when he passed away. And he knew things, right? And, you know, when I look at some of our old people, I sit there and I'm looking at decay. You know, it's depressing to me. These are not people I look up to. I'm not saying that about all old people, not remotely. But when I look up to some of these experienced leaders, you know, who do you have? If Lindsey Graham, are you kidding me? Who do we have to look up to? Who do we have to have come to speeches at for our children? Watching and I've watched these speeches of Putin forever, and Putin never does he talk about himself. Never does he go me me me. Never does he do that. Never does he talk about how evil other people are. He tries to be a diplomatic. You know, he may not like you, and that would be pretty clear. He's had several interviews with what's her name, Megyn Kelly, and he says things even to her. He says, "Listen, you're not going to say what I tell you anyway. What I tell you isn't going to be here," because she was asking him specifically about meddling in elections, and he goes, "It doesn't matter what I say. Whatever I tell you, you're going to print what you want anyway." He said, what do you want me to say? And finally, he just said, she says, "Well, do you have any intention of meddling in the elections in 2020? And he says, well, I'm not sure what you want me to say. He says, yes. He said, maybe if I tell you yes, your three-letter agencies will quit following me, will quit trying to accuse me of it. I'll just say yes." And he's actually right. But I mean, here we have these hard-hitting journalists. They're not hard-hitting journalists. They're people who don't want to listen. They're people who have an agenda for you, you know, that want to tell you what it is. Anyway, I've babbled about that, but I'm telling you, folks, there are some big things occurring in this world right now. And I see it a checkpoint. I watched even Donald Trump today on one of the final little snippets on this topic that I've put together for you on these checkpoints. I feel, and maybe other people feel the same. I feel like there are checkpoints right now, that whether it's God, whether it's I don't know what, whether it's some interplanetary being that left us here in a petri dish for a period of time, and that petri dish is finally something that they can come and look into, or whether whatever your beliefs are, there are a lot of people that believe in the universe, that the universe is going to do this and the universe is going to do that. And I know quite a few of those people that believe the universe gives and the universe has equality, and when somebody wins, somebody else has to lose, and that kind of thing. Whatever your belief structure, it doesn't matter. I wonder if it's out there. But listening to Donald Trump today, I think it was a few days ago, might even have been within the last several weeks that he signed it, but he signed something on AI. And he said something that I have heard repeatedly and over, that we will not recognize where we are. Like, I explained this some time ago, but I feel like the checkpoint, we're all right there. But I'll kind of repeat it if I can recall what I said on this topic, is that... imagine a person who fell asleep in a time machine. Take the dude from the X-Men. What's the guy's name? He carries around a shield, and the shield, he was an army man or something, and he was underwater for God knows how long. Captain America. There you go. Imagine you're Captain America and you go under the ice and you come back, whatever it is, 80 years later, right? And the difference between the 80 years, that 80 years, and the massive difference that went on between 1945, the end of World War II, and call it 2025. They say that technology and this AI is going to move so fast and get so many things done on so many levels that you will not recognize the world of today in the next 10 years. You just won't recognize it. And Trump said something similar today. He said that this, and it was extremely... well put, which is, you know, somewhat rare for him. You know, he I don't know what he speaks off the cuff a lot. So do I, and I like that about him. But you know, sometimes you miss Sometimes if you put together a nice speech that you've memorized and prepared, maybe it'll sound better. But the guy's authentic, at least. You know, you got an authentic guy. And he said something similar to what I just said, that you just won't recognize the world quite soon. And AI will affect everything, that it's going to fix your factories. It'll be used in agriculture. It'll be used in nanotechnology. It'll be used in all kinds of ways. And if you're unfamiliar with it, you should probably become familiar. You might want to find out a little bit about it. And it's a hell of a topic. Anyway, I wanted to pass that out before I got into. I have somewhat of a longer story, and it was, I had two kind of interesting topics with that couple earlier this afternoon. And one was the Ukraine / where are we going kind of thing. And they were, you know, very futuristic in talking about the corruption and things like that. And the other one, they wanted to know specifically about Zelensky and my thoughts about Zelensky. I said, well, personally, I've never been a Zelensky fan, just never. And and maybe it's irrational, but I've never felt that he was the man of the people that he wants people to think he is. And this green t-shirt stuff has always turned me off. Like, you can't just please put on a tie once. You know, you don't own one tie. Come on. You're not going to the battlefield, you know, tomorrow. You wear the appropriate uniform, you know. And the appropriate uniform when meeting with the President of the United States isn't a green t-shirt, you know, with a seal of Ukraine on it. And it's irritating and frustrating to me. I really hope the internet stays working. Many of you know I'm located in Florida, and we've had some storming today, and I hope the internet holds out. I've had troubles a lot of the day on this, and driving me crazy sometimes. But, well, such is life in the big city, don't you know? Still are. I hope we're still connected, and see if we can get back into where we are, because I don't see that I am still, hopefully it's still working, but it looks like it booted me off, and I'm not sure I am still. Okay, it looks like it was still working, but I just took a big black screen on my computer, and it said the connection error. Well, I don't know if this, if I got cut off for a few seconds or not. If so, I apologize, but it looks like it's all working now, so that makes me happy. Anyway, I want to get on to the second topic for tonight, and it, if you haven't been paying attention, there's an organization called NABU, N-A-B-U, and it is the National Anti-Corruption Bureau, okay, and of Ukraine. And it basically, I want to tell you a little bit about it because it's become very important in the last couple of days. Okay, there's a fight for money going on all over Europe and especially in Ukraine, to get Ukraine more money, and the people don't want to give it up. He's begging for money from Trump. Lots of people are trying to say that this was a power play, what has happened in the last few days in Kyiv with the old Green Goblin has to do with this Naboo, and has to do specifically with getting Donald Trump to give him some money, the American people to give him money. Now, I'm against this. I have been from the beginning. This is not our war. It never has been. We started it. You know, we encouraged it. We brought it on. But we need to get out of it. We never should have been in it in the first place. Mr. Lindsey Graham, and I hope to still get to him somewhat today, there, but I only need about 10 minutes to get to him, because there's a great opinion piece on him that I want to share with you. But the Anti-Corruption Bureau, commonly known as NABU, is an institution that was the centerpiece. You know, we built it for Ukraine. You know, it's allegedly there to fight government corruption, but more importantly, it's there to, I don't know, account for our money, money that we're giving to Ukraine, because Ukraine is so corrupt that our government didn't want to just give the money with no way to determine or even figure out where it was going. And, you know, it's unfortunate, because there's still a lot of it disappearing. There are tons of corruption stories over there. But it was formed when we started pumping real money in there. And you add these timelines together, these nonsensical timelines, all they do is reaffirm what we all know about Ukraine now. But remember, this was just some other Iraq, some other Afghanistan, some other Syria, some other place to funnel money for the deep staters to collect, right? Ukraine was just going to be another one of those. And so they started in the same method. They're funneling money into Ukraine. We're going and buying and stealing and paying the graft that needed to be paid to take over Ukraine for the deep state, you know, turn them into a liberal democracy and a submissive member of the NATO for the deep staters, you know, a submissive population that we control, just like everywhere else. This is what the huge, this is the worldwide, the global government is doing for you, the hegemony that they intended back when Hillary Clinton was supposed to win the election of 2016. And I got to tell you, when Donald Trump pulled that off, even Vladimir Putin was surprised, because they thought he was going to lose. They thought they were going to be dealing with Hillary. And so did the rest of us, by the way. And they underestimated how most of us couldn't stand, you know, the amount of hatred, dislike that we had for that evil woman who was doing it only for herself. But from its revolutionary birth, after the 2014 Maidan uprising, it's a bunch of people were killed. That's where we supported the overturn of the legitimately elected government in Kiev. NABU, this agency, it's like a political thriller movie, you know. We're going to go look at how it came to be, why thousands of Ukrainians are right now in the streets shouting, "Hands off NABU," and we'll know about how Western backers of this NABU, Russian critics, and even Donald Trump have weighed in on Ukrainian corruption, because everybody knows it exists. Okay? This is a somewhat complex and explosive saga that gets right to the heart of Ukraine and its future. So let's see. Let's get to where it started. To understand it, we have to start, the revolution that came in 2013 and 2014. Now, you can't believe what people say about this revolution and all of it. If you really want to watch and know, get out there on Apple TV or on whatever it's, wherever you can find it, and find Ukraine on Fire by Oliver Stone and watch it. You can get anything from anywhere else, but watch that as part of your research into whether you believe that we were involved in this or not. And if you're still a Ukraine believer, and by the way, I feel sorry for the Ukrainian people. I feel sorry for the what has happened to them since the collapse of the Soviet Union and the evil things that we have done in the West to destroy their culture and to destroy who they were as a people and to turn many of them into Russian-hating madmen that never should have been. But they changed all their school books and they've done everything. And we have a certain amount of responsibility to bear for that, okay? And they're just the ones paying paying the price for that. Some of them ultimate price with their lives. So if you think of Euromaidan, which occurred in 2013 and 2014, Ukrainians flooded Kiev's Maidan Nezalezhnosti Square, demanding an end to corrupt oligarchic rule, and they wanted a future aligned with Europe, okay? And by February 2014, Viktor Yanukovych had been thrown out. He was notorious crook. And Ukraine's new leadership was voted in, and they had a dual imperative: stabilize the country, root out corruption to satisfy its own people, and to gain the trust of Western partners. That part never occurred, okay? And they're still as corrupt as they were back then. So this organization called Naboo was conceived. International donors, the International Monetary Fund, and the Euro Commission made the creation of the Independent Anti-Corruption Agency a condition for their support of Ukraine. So the IMF, once again, has their fingers in it, and they created this Naboo. Founding and launching the National Anti-Corruption Bureau was one of the requirements set by the IMF and the Euro Commission for relaxation of visa restrictions within the EU. So we'll let you come to Europe to visit. Most of them stay anyway. But you can't have it unless you create this anti-corruption league, which, by the way, Westerners will run and control, not you. Ukraine's parliament on October 14 of 2014, the Verkhovna Rada passed the law on National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, officially establishing Naboo, National Anti-Corruption Bureau of Ukraine, Naboo. This was a groundbreaking moment. Never before had modern Ukraine opened a state agency's leadership to open competitions, but for Naboo's first director, that's what happened. 186 candidates applied to be the head of the new bureau. And in 2015, the new president, Petro Poroshenko, appointed the winner of that contest, a young lawyer and prosecutor named Artyom Sitnik. By 2015, Naboo's headquarters in Kiev were set up, staff were being hired, and an independent specialized anti-corruption prosecutor's office was created to work hand-in-hand with Naboo's detectives to start getting rid of corruption. From the very beginning, Naboo had a mandate: investigate corruption among high-ranking officials, which are basically Ukraine's untouchables, and prepare the case for prosecution. The formation promised a new era where ministers, lawmakers, judges, and oligarchs could finally be held accountable. So they're trying to form something like our Doge, right? So Naboo could be Doge, but their only focus was really on the corruption. Instead, once they found people to go after, they could investigate them, but they couldn't prosecute them. So they would give it over to this SAPO, this group of people that were also independent, and ultimately this newly established anti-corruption court to charge and try the people that were accused. This separation was to ensure that that everything stayed above board and had checks and balances, but it, you know, led to quite a few wars and people getting killed and all kinds of stuff. So for Ukraine's Maidan activists and reformers, Naboo meant, you know, there's a reason to be hopeful, right? But so they had the mission to get rid of corruption, but there were all kinds of people like me that were skeptics, people of the old guard who said they were unwelcome or they wouldn't be able to get anything done. So under the founding law, Naboo was designed to be independent from politics. The idea was to insulate their investigations from interference by the powerful figures they might target. The Bureau answered to Parliament and the public, not to the President or the Cabinet. But in practice, that independence didn't really work out all that well. Legally, Naboo's jurisdiction was to go after top officials and large-scale corruptions, which means sums over a certain threshold. Government ministers, national legislators, generals, CEOs of state enterprises, precisely those who had enjoyed immunity under Ukraine's corrupt system. So Naboo's sister agency was a national agency for the prevention of corruption, was set up to handle assets and corruption prevention, but Naboo would do work on the actual crimes. So together they tried to get rid of all this corruption. Their stated objectives were to detect and investigate corruption offenses by high-ranking officials, stop large-scale embezzlement of state funds, and restore public trust. Okay? Trust in government by trying to get rid of the long-standing immunity and impunity of the elite. We are determined to bring justice to those who once thought themselves to be above the law, said Artyom Sitnik in early press conferences. But if anyone thought the mere creation would scare Ukraine's corrupt class, reality had other plans. The Bureau found itself navigating a minefield of political resistance, legal loopholes, and plenty of sabotage, all trying to build cases solid enough to hold up in court. Before we get into those, let's talk about the important and sensitive aspect of Naboo's identity, who really funds it, and how it is influenced. But it's all funded and from abroad and has international support. So from day one, Naboo's lifeline has been political will, and much of that coming from outside of Ukraine. Remember, the deep state wants and always wanted Ukraine to stick the knife in Russia, right? Because that is the end. Ukraine is supposed to be the final straw to topple the big red bear of Russia. That is what was supposed to happen. That is why we are there. And no one should claim anything to the contrary. And if they do, they're either idiots or just lying to themselves and to you. Because everybody knows why Ukraine is important to us. It's why would Ukraine be our friends as part of the Soviet Union and Russia our enemies as part of the Soviet Union? Why would we continue to differentiate and take them? Some people say that this battle has been going on since before World War I, that they've been trying to take out Russia and Peter the Great time frames way back then. Because Russia was too wild, too big, too huge, and untouchable even way back then. Okay. And so, and after the war, the World War II, they still had the dreams of it. And many people have said, why didn't we continue? Why didn't we take out not only Hitler, but keep on taking out the Russians? Well, because we couldn't. And there's a big argument to be made that we can't now. So the American and EU aid programs mandate that the Ukrainian government fund Naboo adequately. So when we give them money, a big portion of the state budget has to go toward Naboo to fund it. So this would ensure, so us giving them money, a certain portion of it always had to go to Naboo. So beyond funding, support came in the form of expertise, training and political backing. The U.S. Embassy in Kyiv in the European Union provided technical assistance, forensic equipment to advisory help on setting up case management systems. Frankly, they're going to go in and take it over themselves. We're better at being corrupt than you. We'll teach you how to do it. And so there, such support is crucial. But the foreign patronage was always a source of controversy and conspiracy. Those who opposed Ukraine's Western alignment, which is half of the population of Ukraine, seized on Naboo's foreign ties to question its loyalty and independence. Some have gone so far as to brand Naboo as an instrument of the West and its colonialism, its colonial outpost intentions, which are absolutely true, by the way. And now we're deeply embedded into Ukraine's government. Russian and pro-Russian voices have persistently painted Naboo as a creature of Washington or Brussels. So when Naboo and SEPO were created in 2014, the U.S.-backed coup in Kyiv, and you know, we were kind of forcing them to align with the West and not with Russia. That was the reason for the 2014 Maidan uprising that overthrew Poroshenko, and then overthrew Yanukovych, and then Poroshenko come into power. And it wasn't supposed to happen that way, because Poroshenko was actually in the middle of the road. He was he wasn't anti-West, but he certainly wasn't anti-Russian, and he was trying to walk a fine line. But oh no, that's not good enough. We have to get rid of him too. So, but that was the intent of that, and so then they bought him out. Because, you know, basically he was corrupt. At any rate, none of this means that Naboo agents take orders from Washington or anything like that. The employees are still Ukrainians. Most of them are young professionals who wanted to sign up and change their country. But if a significant segment of Ukrainian politicians or the public thinks that Naboo is doing the bidding of foreigners, it means their credibility at home isn't all that great. So this is a challenge, and Sitnik and his team were well aware of this, and they were always emphasizing that Naboo operates under Ukrainian law and jurisdiction, not under the US, the EU. But in fact, the FBI publicly stated that its support to Naboo is in accordance with Ukrainian law. So they try to set that up too, that we back Ukraine. But the biggest problem is it was all and always has been forced funding from outside, and way too much outside influence. You know, it's not like, imagine our country. If people want to come in and say that we have a deep state and we have a corrupt government, we do. And we say, oh, gee, somebody come in and help us fix our government. Let's bring in Russia. Let's bring in China. Let's bring in Saudi Arabia. You know, they have a well-run government. Maybe they can help us root out corruption. Are we as Americans going to want to put up with that? Screw you. We don't need you. We will take care of that ourselves. Ukrainians are proud people. They're former Soviet Union. They're very proud, and they had every reason to be proud. You know, but sometimes they can't get past how corrupt their country is. It's extremely difficult. It's been going on, you know, that people die doing that. You know, ours has been controlled for a long time too. And they rarely need to kill you. They just destroy you financially or turn you into a non-entity. That's what they do here. In the first few years from 2015 to 2018, they were pretty tumultuous. The Bureau had to assemble a team, establish reputation, and actually start taking on a couple of big fish. They needed some wins, right? And they were under a lot of scrutiny, domestically and internationally. There were skeptics that were waiting for them to fail or prove inept. You know, there were supporters demanding high-profile scalps, of course. One of Naboo's early targets was a scheme involving the natural gas industry and an MP named Alexander Onyshenko. Onyshenko was accused of running a multi-million-dollar scam, skimming profits from state gas contracts. Naboo's detectives investigated, and in 2016, they charged him and several co-conspirators with embezzling huge sums of money. It was a bold move against a sitting member of parliament with plenty of allies in high places. The result was a mixed victory. Onyshenko fled Ukraine. He left, took his money, ran away. Oh, looks like they're coming. Turned the case into a prolonged extradition saga. But Naboo made a statement. He was willing to go after acting officials. Another landmark case came against Mykola Martynenka, an MP, a former MP anyway, an ally of Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk. Martynenka was suspected of massive corruption in the energy sector as well. Naboo detained Martynenka in 2017 and accused him of siphoning money from a state uranium company. The case was hailed as a test of Ukraine's anti-graft drive. Martynenka was among one of the most influential people to face charges. Years later, a court would convict him. A delay, you know, but a victory for them. Naboo also set its sights on the defense industry, okay? A domain full of kickbacks everywhere, kickbacks. They sell their weapons to other countries. They take them in from us, sell them to other countries. That has happened on repeat occasions, and people are aware. And this is a definite story, okay? In early 2019, as Ukraine was headed toward new presidential elections, this is when Zelensky became the man. Naboo investigations exposed a scandal involving embezzlement and military procurement, and it was implicating figures like President Poroshenko's inner circle. A journalist investigation revealed that associates of Poroshenko were profiting from smuggling military parts. Naboo confirmed it was probing those allegations, and soon after, the president's longtime friend, Oleg Gladkovsky, who was the deputy head of the National Security Council, was sacked and charged. The optics were striking, an anti-corruption probe touching the presidency itself. During wartime, by the way, because remember, they were still fighting against their own Donbass regions from 2014. It showed Naboo's potential to hold even the powerful to account, but the timing appeared politically motivated, of course. But throughout these investigations, Naboo's relationship with other government law enforcement bodies was adversarial. The old prosecutor's office and the security service seemed more inclined to undermine Naboo than to cooperate or help them. There was a famous clash in 2017. Naboo planted an undercover agent in the state migration service to catch an official soliciting a bribe. But the prosecutor general's office, then led by a guy named Yuri Lutsenko, a Poroshenko ally, raided Naboo's operation, unmasked the agent, and blew the case. That's how you do it. These are movies, right? Lutsenko accused Naboo of operating outside of legal methods, and Naboo cried foul that the sting was sabotaged. A public spat exposed a power struggle and Naboo's aggressive tactics were ruffling feathers. Okay. And this went on. Poroshenko presidency, there were turf wars. Every time somebody was charged with something, or parliamentarians tried more than once to, cut back on funding to Naboo, saying it was overstepping. In 2017, there was a draft law that would have allowed parliament to fire the Naboo director, widely seen as a retaliation for investigation of MPs. Street protests and Western diplomats came in. Gee, wonder where old Lindsey Graham was during them. And this is how you get continued money from the U.S., by the way. So one cannot discuss Naboo's early battles without noting a critical structural problem that emerged. Even when Naboo uncovered corruption, Ukraine's existing court system wouldn't deliver justice. Before a specialized anti-corruption court was created in 2019, Naboo's cases went to regular court, where endless delay and corrupt rulings were common. Judges could stall or sabotage these sensitive trials. This means that for years, Naboo didn't result in any convictions. They might have caught people, might have gotten some money back, but they would say things like, Naboo hasn't jailed anyone big, so what's the point of this? It's frustrating reality. The Bureau would catch a suspect red-handed, but the system would let him go. So, the machinery was coming. It was symbolic, some victories that they had. They prosecuted a case against a member of parliament in 2018. A lawmaker was found guilty of soliciting a bribe for influencing a mining enterprise. The sentence was a fine and not jail, but it said that, people could be gotten. There was a guy who was in charge of the state accountancies, Roman Nazirov. He was indicted for abuse of his office, and his trial dragged on for years, but he was eventually convicted. And they had a lot of political problems, trying to, and it's still ongoing, as you'll see when we get to the last few days. But you can't really tell the story of what they're trying to do now. The biggest controversies were from outside, of Naboo. And they reveal how entangled Ukraine's fight against corruption comes with, trying to be in the politics of great power, getting in the big game with the United States. In 2019 and 2020, the U.S. was going into a heated presidential election. Naboo found itself dragged into the Trump-Biden saga, and here's what happened. Back in 2016, Naboo had publicized a discovery of a black ledger of Yanukovych's party. And they got secret records that included cash payments meant for Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's campaign chairman. The revelation of Manafort's name and alleged $12.7 million in illicit payments forced Manafort to resign, and it was a big news story in the U.S. And at the time, Naboo saw this as doing its job exposing corruption with Yanukovych's book, right? But to the allies of Trump, it looked like Ukraine was meddling in U.S. elections against Trump. Gee, I wonder where that came from, right? Fast forward to 2019. Andrei Derkach, a Ukrainian MP with KGB training and later identified by the U.S. as a Russian agent, he started publishing documents and making claims that Naboo was effectively colluding with the U.S. Democrat Party and the U.S. Embassy. Derkach released correspondence between a Naboo official and someone at the Department of Justice, implying the Americans guided Naboo's cases and even asked for info on Ukrainian companies linked to Joe Biden's son, Burisma. Derkach claimed that Joe Biden influenced Ukrainian authorities to close cases related to Burisma Zona. We know about those. These allegations were part of a broader disinformation campaign. Notice how they get to call it disinformation. But they gained traction especially when Trump's lawyer, Giuliani, was telling about him. But the narrative is that Nabu isn't independent, okay? And they really aren't. They're they're not independent. So these accusations put Nabu in an uncomfortable position internationally. It's named as, you know, Donald Trump is citing Ukrainian corruption. So if you want to know why Trump is anti-Ukraine, part of it is this, okay? It's got to be. And think about all of this. So in a phone call, well, let's get the whole story here. Donald Trump began citing Ukrainian corruption as a rationale for his hold on military aid way back in 2019. Mick Mulvaney, Trump's chief of staff at the time, mentioned to the Justice Department review of Ukrainians' role in the 2016 election, referenced the DNC server conspiracy, and the hints at Nabu's Manafort ledger leak. In a phone call that led to Trump's first impeachment, Trump pressed Zelensky to look into Biden's dealings, referencing how they said Biden stopped the prosecution, Shokin's firing, and floating the name CrowdStrike, a theory involving a DNC server supposedly hidden in Ukraine. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Nabu was not named explicitly, but it was very much part of the subtext of what Trump's world was alleging. Ukraine's anti-corruption institution was weaponized by Biden in some way. So all this put Zelensky in a tight spot early in his term because he was elected in 2019. He had to balance maintaining support from the U.S., which he needed, without getting entangled into U.S. politics. Now, I think he wanted to be entangled in politics. I think he was absolutely in Biden's pocket, and he certainly wasn't. And remember, he campaigned on the other side. You know, he came in and showed up for Biden. Meanwhile, the Ukraine political tax on Nabu continued, right? In late 2019, a constitutional court ruled that Artyom Sitnik's appointment as a Nabu director by Poroshenko was unconstitutional because the president shouldn't appoint the Nabu head. He was allowed to stay on. The ruling implied that Nabu's leadership is going to be pretty shaky. So there's one more controversy to put into note before we get to what's really going on today. In late 2020, Nabu targeted a figure in Zelensky's inner circle, a guy named Oleg Tatarov, who was deputy head of the president's office. Tatarov was suspected of bribery in a real estate case. Just as Nabu prepared to charge him, the case was taken away and reassigned to the Ukrainian Security Service by a decision from the prosecutor general, who was appointed by Zelensky. So Zelensky saving his buddy. All the anti-corruption watchdogs were going crazy, and they accused the government of protecting Tatarov. And the indictment said that, you know, that Zelensky would not necessarily be going against corruption, even if it touched his team. The public bickering continued, and this politically motivated interference was exactly what was this agency was supposed to prevent. But no, it was there. So the first 5 or 6 years of Nabu were a roller coaster. It had a couple of victories, but they were pretty minor, and then a lot of negative stuffs, okay? So the Nabu crisis and Maidan style of 2025. In 2025, Ukraine had been, or has been now, fighting Russia for 3 years. President Zelensky has enjoyed, you know, support in the beginning, not so much now, and the Ukrainians are losing everywhere. But there's still plenty of corruption and independence, right? Independent. Anti-corruption institution, this Nabu. They still both exist. So this summer, Zelensky pissed off a whole bunch of Ukrainians, and it happened pretty quickly. And on July 22nd, 2025, the Verkhovna Rada, parliament, passed law number 12414. A set of amendments buried inside a larger bill on law enforcement. Little warning, no public debate, but the content, once revealed, was this. It undercut the independence of both Naboo and SAPO and put them under control of the prosecutor general's office, the guy that Zelensky had sweep his friend's charges under the rug. The law gives the prosecutor general the power to intervene in Naboo investigations at will, including access to all Naboo case files, authority to reassign or close cases, to issue binding instructions to Naboo detectives, and even dictate prosecutorial decisions for SAPO, the other agency, the courts. In effect, Naboo and SAPO would become subordinate units of the prosecutor general again, who's appointed by the president. So basically, Zelensky can't have money. Now, a lot of people are saying that this is because Zelensky wants funding, and he knows that they've demanded we'll just get rid of this corruption league. Now, this is foolish logic if this is true, because let's say that Zelensky says, well, we'll just take Naboo. You got your fingers in our pies and are telling us where to spend all of our money, and you're only tracking it through this Naboo, both EU and the United States. And so why would we then, how about if we put it under my control through my prosecutor's office? You know, they're going to take care of me. They will make sure that you, unless you give us more money, don't get what you want. You know, so a lot of people are saying this is a game that he is playing. Okay, but unfortunately, you still got some believers in Ukraine, especially among the young guys, because they don't have to fight. The young men that are 18 to 25, they haven't been sent to war yet to die, and so. But the reaction was pretty swift after they made these attempts to get rid of Naboo and SAPO. So on July 22nd, within hours of this vote, people started gathering in central Kyiv and other cities. Despite air raid sirens and martial law curfews, citizens were out in force, many of them young, in their 20s. Frankly, that's all that's left. If anybody else went outside, they'd get arrested and sent to the front. Most of them were still children during the 2014 Maidan. By July 23rd, thousands converged outside of the Ivan Franko Theater in Kyiv, which is a few blocks from the presidential office. They carried cardboard signs and Ukrainian flags, said veto the law, no to pressure on independent institutions, and shame. We demand action, not excuses. Corruption kills. And stuff like that. It was the largest public demonstration in years, certainly since the war started. And there's Zelensky's response was pretty alarming to the protesters. While they were still chanting for his head, Zelensky went ahead and signed the bill anyway. He signed it into law. Many couldn't believe that he just completely ignored the public outcry. Some of them still trust him, right? And why, I can't figure out, but not my country, right? Not only that, the manner of the law's adoption was very, very fast. Passed in a day as an amendment hidden inside unrelated reforms, and then signed and published immediately. To civic activists, it was a sneak attack to get rid of anti-corruption safeguards. So Zelensky's government has defended this move. And nobody's convinced. His official line is that the law was needed to strengthen the fight against corruption, right? By centralizing oversight and rooting out alleged, most important, Russian disinformation and infiltration into the anti-corruption agency. In a video address after he signed it, he said that Ukraine's anti-corruption infrastructure must be cleansed of Russian influence. He suggests that Russian spies might be lurking within Naboo and SAPO, and that giving Prosecutor General more control would keep out their hostile influences, right? But the SBU, days before, had raided Nabu's offices and arrested all their employees. Some of them they charged with spying for Russia. Crazy stuff. So on July 25th, 3 days afterward, Zelensky has now made a dramatic U-turn. He's conceding to the protesters' demand. In a new video posted on X, he acknowledged hearing what people are saying on social media to each other and on the streets and promised to analyze all concerns. He would introduce a new bill that would ensure independence of anti-corruption bodies, effectively restoring what the controversial law had stripped, and even claiming that this too would get rid of Russian influence. He's going to create a new one. You see? Crazy stuff. Now this is quite the story, actually. I wonder if I have time to get to Lindsay, or if I real quickly, he 2 days after signing the law, what did he say? The new legislation that he's got is full-fledged guarantees on independent anti-corruption agencies. I'm not so sure. I wanted to get to this. There's an interesting article. It's called What Drives the Old G-Man? What Drives Lindsey Graham's Ukrainian Crusade? I think the answer is pretty simple. Now, remember where he came from and who he was good friends with. Yeah, this article's too long. I'm going to have to save it for you. I could paraphrase it, but I won't. So let's get to some of the news of the day. Did you hear about, unfortunately, this plane in Russia that crashed with 49 people on board? It was flying over the Amur region. A passenger aircraft crashed in Russia's far east, killing all 49 on board. The Angara Airlines Antonov An-24 twin-engine turboprop went down at 1 p.m. local time near the city of Tinda. The plane was flying a multi-leg domestic route from Khabarovsk to Blagoveshchensk and then on to Tinda. According to preliminary data, there were 43 passengers, 5 children, 6 crew members. Wreckage was found on a wooded mountainside 15 kilometers from Tinda. Investigative authorities confirmed no survivors. They're looking into it vanished from radar during its second approach to land, having aborted the initial attempt for reasons that were unclear. So they're still investigating. Angara Airlines, based in Irkutsk, operates Soviet-era turboprop aircraft on regional routes across Siberia and the Russian Far East. The AN-24 model in Thursday's crash, first entered service in the 60s and remained in use on some of the country's most isolated air routes. No immediate statements from the airline. Amur region has roughly 750,000 people. It borders China and is, vast expanse of forests, mountains, rivers. Tinda itself is an outpost with 30,000 residents built in the 70s. And it it supports the Baikal-Amur mainline, Russia's second largest major east-west rail corridor. City is 2,000 kilometers from Khabarovsk, which is a major regional capital. So they haven't gotten much on that story just yet, which is unfortunate. Well, what did we have in the breaking news? Let's see here. And get to something. There's another Zelensky on this Sapo. This is an opinion piece. Ukraine is seeing its first mass protests since the start of its conflict with Russia. Since July 22nd, thousands have taken to the streets chanting Ganba, which I guess is shame in Ukrainian. But this is no popular revolt. It's an internal power struggle between two rival camps in Ukraine's elites. On one side are Zelensky and his right-hand man, Andrei Yermak, based at Zelensky's office. And on the other hand are the foreign-funded NGOs, intelligence-linked assets, and remnants of Pyotr Poroshenko's political machine. These include Naboo and Sapo, bodies created at the West's insistence to impose external control over Ukrainian politics. The spark was a recent bill that was rammed through the Rada in emergency mode. The law stripped Naboo and Sapo of autonomy and placed them under the control of Prosecutor General Zelensky's office. In other words, the very agencies tasked with investigating corruption must now report to the people who are the most corrupt. Unsurprisingly, anti-corruption camp people cried foul. But this isn't really about clean government, it's about influence. For years, Naboo and Sapo operate as instruments of Western leverage, the Democratic Party establishment in Washington. They answered more to U.S. and EU embassy than to the Ukrainian people. And Zelensky has had enough. The timing is no accident. With Trump back in power, the support once enjoyed by the Poroshenko-era clique is fading. Zelensky saw an opening, and he struck. They're saying he's sly with what he did. His first move came earlier this year with corruption cases that targeted Poroshenko himself. Now he's gone after the crown jewel of Western liberal influence in Kiev. The message is clear. There is to be no parallel power structure. The president gets full control. By the way, the photo of him here on this page, and I heard another commentator talking about it today. He said that now when you see pictures of Zelensky, it's no longer with a smile and a determined and a something look. He now looks like a madman. Every time you see him, he looks stupid or he looks like a madman. You know, they pick and choose the photos that they put of him out there, and you'll never see them any longer because they're going to get rid of him. He's on the way out, and everybody's saying it. And so it's just a small question of time. But it may be a gamble that went too far. Western European officials, already frustrated with Kiev's domestic conduct, warned that Ukraine's EU bid is going to be blocked if he keeps this up. Well, he's not going to get in there anyway. The opposition, sensing blood, brought people into the streets. And these gained traction fast. Well, that's because they're anti-Zelensky now anyway. So it won't be hard. They might come over this issue, but they're really coming for another issue. The real question is whether Zelensky will stand or retreat. Early in the presidency, he was terrified of sharing Yanukovych's fate and often folded under public pressure. But he's cleaned the political landscape. He doesn't have any enemies anymore. He's put them in jail, had them arrested. They're gone, right? And so Yermak is a ruthless guy, his right hand, and the risks are considerable. Zelensky's never managed to convince Western Europe that he's irreplaceable. He's not irreplaceable. If Brussels just tries to pull the plug, financial or politically, his position will unravel fast. The same donors who backed him will soon be out shopping for somebody more pliant, somebody more willing to listen to them, right? And even if he climbs down and restores Naboo, the damage is done. The opposition has momentum. Western backers will start asking tough questions, and the illusion of Zelensky as a unifying democratic wartime leader will take yet another hit. Nobody believes that anymore. Anyway, none of this means Ukraine is headed for collapse, but it does suggest Zelensky is far more vulnerable than he appears. His grip on power depends on how far he's willing to go to silence foreign and domestic opposition. If he loses this, that's why he's backpedaling. He's made a mistake, and he has to try to fix it. Zelensky is probably, you know, and he already did. He put out his video earlier saying that he's going to appease the EU, but he won't let them be a fully funded Western like it was before. All of the lies that they pump out about these two agencies, they did have some independence, but trust me, that independence was really Western governance. And now they may be saying they're going to do it for the good of Ukraine. Well, we're going to help you get into the EU. We're going to help you ultimately get into NATO. What they've done is they've already bought the country. So if you look at this big picture, all you've done is given your corrupt machine to another set of people. The same thing we do every 4 years. We pass off the corrupt reins to the next people. They're all sneeches. Some just have an X and some just have an O on them. They're all the same ugly folks, these politicians. So I don't like to have anybody thinking. Has anybody heard anything, by the way, about Elon Musk and his new party? I haven't heard anything about that lately. We might have to look into that a little bit some more. But whatever happens in Ukraine, you can guarantee a couple of things. That corruption will still exist, number one. That the people will not be taken care of, number two. Not to the extent that they should. The money's going to be siphoned out for people like the big guy, you know, for people like Graham Cracker. He'll make sure to get his cut. He'll make sure that the war continues. And I really want to get to that article for you, but I just sadly didn't have time for that. You might be able to find it. It's called What Drives Lindsey Graham's Crusade for Ukraine. I'll try to get to it on Sunday. I wanted to give you a bit of an update. At right about 4:30 p.m., I got an email from the governor's office with all of my paperwork. I haven't had a chance to go through it yet, but now I have the Supreme Court, if you want to call it the answer that they gave to me, saying that they don't have anything. I have the governor's documents of how he appoints his members to this judicial selection committee, and the bar has not answered at all. Now it's been a full 3 weeks, and I'm going to send them yet another request. So stay tuned for that. We'll talk about that on Sunday. There are plenty of things to talk about in the world. Plenty of corruption to discover and to talk about. I encourage you, of course, to always listen to damradio.com/live. You can go to damradio.com/schedule. And get our complete schedule and listen to it. And I hope that you do. And there's a great number of people who are doing our shows. We're doing a lot of shows on here. Man, I can't talk. I don't know what's going on with me. I'm feeling like I'm going crazy. I'm not crazy, but juggling words here. In my head of what I wish to say. It's driving me batty. But at any rate, I think you should get on and check out that schedule. You can always listen to my shows if you feel like going back. Go to internationalflavor.com, and all of my shows are uploaded and put out there for your listening pleasure.